enjoy saying you were a fighter for another day. Try that against me. I'm catching a body at Jake Paul. And you mob with hoes. I wouldn't walk into a pillow fight with them. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, the show where the news of the day is usually giving us enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you and get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin, and I'm joined by the Godfather of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John, I'm well. You know, you kind of look like a kid that grew up in Seattle, and you idolize Tony Hawk. But the only funny thing is, Tony Hawk was like 15 when you were 25.
Right,
that's
exactly.
Kind of the look you're giving me right now. That's a vibe exactly. I'm getting.
That's the
but
look
no.
I'm going for.
Listen, I'm looking forward to a busy week in MMA. We got the PFL going on right now as we speak. So there's probably some poor fan that's asleep in attendance watching all those wrestlers going at it. Other than that, UFC 261 content tomorrow night, whenever this comes out. So maybe check it out in the past, check it out in the future. I don't know. Just go check it out. Good stuff coming this week.
There's a rumor. I cannot confirm it. I cannot deny. There may be an FMP recap show on Sunday. It's a big card, wow. Craig. It's a big
wow.
card. On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Masvidal's bare knuckles, Chimaev to 205, and showtime for the PFL. But we begin with the biggest star in combat sports, Jake Paul. Seems everyone from Daniel Cormier to Tommy Fury wants a piece of the YouTuber turned boxer. And with the ease he had in finishing Ben Askren, the real question isn't if, but when and against who. We will see Jake Paul next. Craig, if we know, who we don't. So tell us, who will Jake Paul fight next?
I think it'll be this summer. And I think it would be wise, and this is going to sound a little weird, but I think it would be wise if Jake Paul goes up against UFC again, because that's what they did last weekend, and they drew reported record numbers. What was it, 1.5 million pay-per-view buys? So are you going to bring like a pencil board out? You going to ride it here? Is that what you're grabbing for? So yeah, listen, if they did that well against the UFC card, and listen, it was a fight night. I thought it was a pretty good fight night. Like, you know, I started off all the videos really excited for, really looking forward to. This one's piquing my interest, but it was a good card. I mean, Gaslam Whitaker in the main event, and you went up head-to-head with Jake Paul. So I feel like if you're Jake Paul, you can probably swing it against a UFC card, not just a fight night, but probably a pay-per-view, and you can draw eyes away from them. Why not pick out another MMA fighter, UFC fighter, former boxer? I mean, listen, Logan has that fight against Floyd Mayweather, and that looks like it's going to be a real thing coming up this summer. So if I'm Jake Paul, do you bite on the bait that is Tyron Woodley? Probably not. Probably not. So maybe take another Rufus Sport guy, like Gerald Meerschaert or somebody like that. I think that's got to be the angle. Listen, you know, no current UFC fighters are going to be allowed to fight on that card. Dana White took, you know, some pretty major offense to Jake Paul actually calling out UFC fighters. But I think it does have to be an actual fighter, because you can't just go from what, fellow YouTuber to NBA star to then former MMA fighter, wrestler. You got to keep going with the trend of fighters now. You can't back down.
I feel like there's two plays here. I disagree with you. I feel like there's two plays here. I think it's either Tyron Woodley or Tommy Fury. You have to fight either another UFC fighter that continues the story that you're already telling, the picture that you're already painting, or you got to transition over to boxers. Now, here's where I think it's time to start transitioning over to boxers, is I think that he's losing, not that he ever had it, because Ben Askren's retired, but he's losing a partner in Dana White. I don't think Dana wants to play this game anymore. I don't think Dana's going to give his fighters the because now we're reaching the point where everybody's sleeping on Jake Paul. And the question that was our initial sparring sessions, but we changed it, so I'll pose it now. Is it in the best interest of a UFC fighter to fight Jake Paul? Is it in the best interest of anybody to fight Jake Paul that's a professional? But do you think that there's – the juice is worth the squeeze when you fight Jake Paul?
Depends on who you give to him. I mean, like, let's see. He weighs 190, so you got to pick what? A middleweight? Let's go with the hotness. That is no longer. What if we put Kevin Holland up against Jake Paul? Do you think Kevin Holland wins? Yeah, he probably does. But let's go back to my original guy, Gerald Meerschaert. And I joke about it. I think Paul probably beats Gerald Meerschaert. Like, he probably beats most wrestler grappler types. So if you're any MMA promotion, I think you're probably going to be a little bit leery if you give a wrestler grappler up. It would have to be a striker. But yeah, I probably wouldn't be all that hot on giving my guy up. But at the same time, like, we've seen Bellator do some weird stuff. I don't know professional wrestling at all, but I do know the last time that now ranked Bellator heavyweight, 3-0 Jack Swagger, that beat your guy, your Southern gentleman, by split decision, Brandon Carlton. Bet you never would have thought you'd hear that name again.
No.
They gave him like a huge intro for some of his fights. They had like his wrestling, what would you call them? Like a brood? Is that what you go with?
Yeah,
like his whole crew, they all came out and they made it like a whole spectacle, a whole scene. Maybe you do something like that with another MMA fighter. But if it wasn't in the cards for Ben Askren, then I really don't know who you throw back in there.
It gets weird because, you know, we've talked about this before just in breaking down fights. MMA boxing and boxing are different. And the weird thing that I can't quite figure out about Jake Paul yet, because I haven't taken his fights all that seriously to break them down. I mean, I'm, you know, Jake Paul's the kind of guy you watch fight with a drink in your hand, not a notebook. So I think that the thing that gets weird for me is this kid just wild enough that he goes in there and he swings for the fences? Because even guys that are good sometimes don't always take out just nobodies. Because listen, I went to go see Roy Jones fight an amateur boxer for all intents and purposes. I think it took him like 3 or 4 rounds just because he was fighting like he would normally fight. Whereas Jake Paul's like, all right, I'll go in here, I'll protect myself, and I'll swing for the bleachers. And if guys aren't ready for that, I think Jake Paul is dumb enough to go for finishes, whereas some guys wouldn't. So I'm going to throw a name at you. We've said this name before. If you're Bellator, would you throw Aaron Pico at him? And I know there's like a, you know, there's a couple of pounds difference there. But is it worth you, as Bellator, risking who Aaron Pico is? Because Aaron Pico probably beats him in a boxing match, right?
Nah. Well, the weight's too big of a difference. I mean, Aaron Pico's a featherweight. Like, I don't see it. Again, like, when I get excited for knockouts, it's like full extension overhand right, Aaron Pico. And like you said, I mean, he's what? He's the premier wrestler. But he's had Freddie Roach train him in boxing, and he does have pretty slick hands. But the weight difference is from 190 to 145. Even if Aaron Pico bulks up, then he has that fight. Then he's got to cut back down to 45.
You know, like my scenario, and this is a very long-winded first segment, but my scenario would be he doesn't cut. So he goes in there 160.
He's not a big guy. Yeah, I'm not with it. I'm not with it. But I tell you what I am with it, John, or how I'm with it. It seems like all the fanfare around Whitaker Gastelum and the absolute masterclass that Robert Whitaker put on, that apparently nobody watched because they were paying attention to Doja Cat over on the Triller stream, or Justin Bieber and whatever dance he was doing. Like, we just did not enjoy it. We had it like 2 different screens. It was too much. Triller, come on. Al Bernstein getting a contact high, it was just weird. But if you were paying attention to the UFC card, it seemed like everything that happened last weekend was all for naught, as UFC 263 has found its headliner with Brazil's Combate reporting that Israel Adesanya is going to face Marvin Vettori in June, June 12th to be specific. John, are you cool with the fight, or do you see this, like, is it enough time for Israel Adesanya to make the right adjustments to go in there ahead of a rematch with Marvin Vettori after getting totally out-wrestled by Jan Blachowicz up weight class?
It's, you know, this is a weird fight for me because this rings of Cody Garbrandt, and for this reason. We talked in the past about sometimes you have to book a fight because of the fight's relevance in the moment, right? So there may be – Robert Whittaker's not going anywhere. And with apologies to Marvin Vettori, we don't know if this kid's long for the game. He's been looking impressive for some time now, but Whittaker is a bona fide star. He's going to beat – the top three more than he's going to lose to the top three, right? So we know Whitaker's going to be around for a while. Obviously, he just reaffirmed that by what he did to Kelvin Gastelum. So you can wait on the Whitaker fight. I think that if you keep putting Vettori out there and somebody beats him, then you've lost that thing, which is he's on a streak. He had a controversial loss to Adesanya. I think that Marvin Vettori is striking while the iron's hot.
Yeah, like to me, I look at controversial losses. I'd probably go, and a lot of people disagreed with this, and this was Matt's take, but I'll recycle it. You know, Whitaker Till. He thought you could make a pretty strong argument that Till won the fight against Whitaker. And then when I look at Adesanya and Vettori, I know it was a split, but I could have sworn most people had Adesanya winning two rounds of that fight. Like, it still is a good rematch, and Styles making fights, I like it a lot. But in a five-round atmosphere, after seeing Israel Adesanya's last time out struggle with a guy that can wrestle quite well in Jan Blachowicz, it's just tricky to make those adjustments that quick. It's like Conor McGregor. How excited are you for Conor Dustin 3? How was Conor McGregor favored in that fight to win by odds makers when he saw exactly what happened in their second fight? And in their third fight, what happens if Dustin goes, oh, okay, well, I'm done striking. I'm just going to start wrestling him now. So to me, I look at the Adesanya fight against Vettori. It's a great opportunity for Italy to finally get a champ. Like, I think this is a really, really good one. You talk about striking when the iron's hot. It's weird because City Kickboxing, and again, you hate to lump everybody from New Zealand with them, but they're all from, there's a lot of guys from the same gym. They've been doing really well lately. Why would you want to kind of squash that? Like, the last couple of years have been all City Kickboxing, and now you send Vittorio out there. He's the most dangerous of them.
Yeah, it's, again, it's a weird thing for me in that sometimes, like we said, you're right. I don't know that as many people had that fight close, but you, if you're Dana White, you get to tell the narrative of the result. You don't have to, you're not going to bring up, MMADecisions.com. You're just going to say it was a split, which means the kid might've won. And that's how you promote the fight. You know, you show, you do the cut of Vettori looking good, you know, when you're doing the promos and, you know, you do the cut of maybe, Adesanya losing to Blachowicz. And now we have the promo. So yeah, I think it's striking while the iron's hot. But it's weird to me that they would say sometimes, you know, with Dana, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, potentially. Dana's talking about Africa in 2022 with Bill Simmons doing a card out there. So it's like, does he want Adesanya to be champ when that happens? Is he putting him in bad positions? We'll see.
What song would you pick for that promo? Because you laid it out pretty well. Would it be like Bring the Noise by Anthrax? Or would you go with like a little bit of Metallica? A lot of jump cuts?
Yeah, I think it'd definitely be some Metallica and some jump cuts.
Okay.
All right, Craig, we move on. Craig, it wouldn't be a Jorge Masvidal fight week in Florida without Colby Covington trying to stir the pot. This week he posted a picture of himself with Masvidal's ex-wife captioned out here playing games with Mrs. Masvidal. He's also saying that if Usman wins on Saturday night, that he'd sooner retire than fight Kobe, which Usman said he's retiring is in the is an option for him as well. We haven't seen Kobe since September of last year against Tyron Woodley. So what's Covington's play here? What's Usman's play here? Masvidal, he seems like he's long for this game no matter what. I mean, he's going to be around for a while. But what do you think Covington's plays here? Play is here.
Well, Covington's got to create the headlines, and it's been weird, right? Because since Vicente Luque just beat Tyron Woodley, it seems like he does an interview every other day with like a major publication. He hasn't been with Fight Night Picks yet, but I think maybe we'll be on the list next because Luque is still keeping his name in the headlines. With Covington, it's weird because he tried that, what was it, Pollyanna Viana angle, where he was like, hey, you know, we're hanging out. Now he's like holding video game controllers with what I've read is Jorge Masvidal's ex-wife. Cool, man. Like, way to cut a promo. I don't think anybody cares. Colby Covington just trying to get his name out there. I'd like to see a fight between Covington and Masvidal. I'd like to see a rematch between Usman and Covington. So he's just trying to kind of insert himself in there. But I do think it's kind of perfect. The way that the stars are aligning around this Florida card, I think it's a perfect opportunity for Colby Covington to kind of like, listen, just hang out underneath the cage. And then after the fight's done, he pulls like an Undertaker, the lights go off, and boom, there's Colby Covington. Now we got a fight.
Yeah. You know, Colby Covington stuff is kind of cringy for me, but at the end of the day, he's a hell of a fighter. And the only one that's really, really had his number is Usman. So, I mean, I think that he's falling into this trap that I think Jorge Masvidal fell into as well, where it's that you get to the very top and now everything is like, I don't want to take this fight because it could ruin me getting the rematch. And I'm trying to angle and I'm trying to do some social media and I'm trying to get, you know, we talk about the push and the mandate. We talked about that forever ago. Chael Sonnen said it. You get the push from the fans. Or, I'm sorry, the push from the promotion to the mandate from the fans. He's trying to get one or the other. Can't get either. Maybe he thinks sitting down with Mrs. Masvidal might do that. We'll see. But I just – sometimes the mistake some of these fighters make is what makes you great is activity, and then you spend all this time out of the cage trying to angle for the next fight, and then when you get it, you're not ready for it. So we'll see.
We'll see what happens. He's not getting any younger. He's 33. All right, John, we'll move it on over. You know my feelings about the Ultimate Fighter, but last weekend during the UFC Fight Night broadcast, we had a chance to see the upcoming season's rosters. So on a scale from Too Hot to Handle to 90 Day Fiancé of awful reality TV, where does the Ultimate Fighter fall for you? And does this cast and coaching staff have what it takes to revive the show?
Let's start with the cast. I don't know any of them. I'd have to ask you. Let's talk about the coaches.
Dude, come on.
I'm looking at the cast right now. It looks like a bunch of guys I've never seen.
You want me to go through a few? Like Vince Murdoch, he had that brain condition. Then he came back on Dana White's Contender Series. He got knocked out by Luis Saldana. Mitch Raposo, he's like a Uber prospect at a Fall River, Massachusetts. That's where Yorgan DeCastro fights out of. People are excited about him. Friend of the show, who we're going to mention in a second, Nolan King. Josh Redinghouse, if you've ever watched, you know, Sergey Morozov fight or Marlon Moraes, he fought them. Like, there's some good names at bantamweight. At middleweight, it kind of is what it is. There's some names out there. But Kemran Lachinov is another guy from, like, Northeastern. He's from West Springfield, Massachusetts, so you can get excited about him. But to me, like, I hate to hijack the question myself, but there's not a lot of names that people are going to get excited about. And the coaches are fine, but it seems to me, yeah, like we talked about this, it's going to be Volkanovski, like having a good time. Brian Ortega taking it way too serious. Like, it's just going to be really weird. You're going to have totally different vibes. Like, whose team would you rather be on? Volkanovski and he has Craig Jones, or Brian Ortega and whoever the other coaches Brian assembled?
I'd probably rather be on Ortega's team for a number of other reasons. But I think that the weird thing about this is Tough traditionally, and I'm not somebody that follows Tough ultra closely. We'd have to talk to Max Friedman if we really wanted to get into a friend of the show, Max Friedman. I feel like I've never known of a season with a ho-hum cast and ho-hum coaches to be just this great season. Typically, it's guys we know that hate each other, show up to hate each other, and spend the entire season hating each other. That's what Tough is for. That's what's always worked. And, you know, some guys that we kind of know coming in are guys that are looking to make a splash. So I'm not overly excited about this Tough season, but it's not for me. I'm not the demographic.
What's more for you? Like, I can't even, I'm not a skateboard guy. I can't continue these jokes. What were those magazines in like the early 2000s?
Ridiculousness. The Fantasy Factory, all those Rob Dyrdek MTV shows.
Oh, that's God. What,
yeah.
Ugh.
Okay, Craig, and we move on as we record. The PFL is back with an all new 10 fight card in New Jersey. The motherland for Mr. Franklin on ESPN and TSN in Canada. There's some recognizable names, and some even more recognizable names have bought into the brand over the past few months. Ray Lewis and Wiz Khalifa. The scale here is 1 on TNT to Bellator on Showtime. How big of a dent can the PFL make in its return, Craig?
To go back to like the reality TV, like some of those shows, you know, you're sitting on the couch, you turn one on, and then 5 hours later, you have no idea what happened, and you're enthralled.
John, before we go further, what's your time warp? Like, what is your blackout show? Meaning, you start it at 1 o'clock, and next thing you know, it's 8 o'clock. What are your shows?
Reality shows, or just my shows in general?
Reality shows.
Yeah, 90 Day Fiancé is a good one.
Yeah?
Yeah. So that's probably it.
So here's my time eaters. The Challenge and Bar Rescue. Those two shows will just, before you know it, I've lost 7 hours of my life. So what do we got here? What do we got? What do you make of the PFL? Are you excited?
Okay, so the best part about it is, like, what was it? A couple weeks ago, last episode, Early Stoppage, Bellator prelims were on. I made fun of you. Right now, PFL's on. But here's the weird thing. I talk about these changes I wish that Bellator would make, and then they don't. And now the PFL's back. And I threw out a tweet before this, like, PFL's trying to bring sabermetrics into MMA because they're still doing the thing of total arm strikes, total leg strikes, total strikes, and then strike speed as the fights are going on. So I watched a couple of the prelim fights, and here's what I have to report back to you, John. This is a 10-fight card tonight. Pettis is taking on Clay Collard in the main event. Lance Palmer is going to fight Bubba Jenkins in a fight that could put any baby to sleep. Like, I'm looking at it, four fights in, the winning fighters all have 3 points. Do you know what that means? That's bad.
The playoffs. No,
the most points you can get is 6. The least amount is 3. They're all decisions. Alex Martinez won a decision. Tyler Diamond, apparently that was a fight of the night contender against Joe Sung Bin. Didn't watch it. Chris Wade and Akhmat Aliyev. A lot of wrestlers in that. A lot of decision wins. To me, they're doing some of the right things. I mean, friend of the show, James Lynch, now social media, well, was social media guru, now PFL social media guru, is doing some stuff out there. But they're trying to rope people in. They've got all these celebrity investors. I threw it out there and I put it like in But Why News. Why would Wiz Khalifa invest in the PFL? Because these guys, like, think about it, John. You have the opportunity to invest in the NFL or you have the opportunity to invest in the XFL. And if you put $5 into each one, you have an opportunity for a return. Which are you going to get a better return on your investment, NFL or XFL?
The NFL.
Yeah, exactly. It's a stupid question, right? Why would you put your money into a company that's marketing itself as the second biggest MMA promotion in the world? Like, it's just, it's silly to me. It's really, really silly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think it's impossible for them to get in. I mean, when everything went down with Endeavor and, you know, Mark Wahlberg, all these guys, I think a lot of these guys, it's like, how much do I have to pay for the tweet? How much do I have to pay for the announcement on the PFL letterhead and say that I'm affiliated with it? I think that some of these guys just do it to make themselves seem tough because they're affiliated with, you know, it's a branding thing, right? If Kevin Hart works out all the time and now he's in with the PFL, it kind of is in line with his brand. I'm concerned. Do you think that there is a responsibility of the stars that are in the PFL to go out and perform? Like, if you're Showtime Pettis. Okay, hold on. I mean, first of all, the structure of the season is that you would perform. But do you feel like there should be any extra pressure on Pettis to go out there and, like, you know, finish Collard for, like, the good of the promotion? Like, does he have that added, you know what I'm saying?
What is this, like, BKFC?
Maybe, but I mean, does he have the added pressure to do this or what?
No, I mean, like, think of your heavyweight winner last year, Ali Asayev, like, Olympic wrestler. Was there any pressure on him to get any finishes? Not really. I mean, he finished Gerald Rosholt in the finals, another wrestler. Like,
right, but he's not a guy that jumped off a cage and kicked somebody in the face. I mean, Pettis is a star. Pettis was on a Wheaties box.
That's a good question. Pettis was, and I mean, he put on a good performance in his last time out. Do you know who he fought?
No.
Alex Morono. And he looked great, and it was a good fight, but, like, I don't think most people would kind of even remember some of the recent Pettis fights. Like, his other win before that was Cowboy. That was a good win. And then he lost to Diaz before that. But people remember Pettis from 10 years ago and not Pettis from, like, 2 years ago. And that's the trouble. So I've got the numbers. We did a Pettis Collard video for this week to throw into this week in MMA, which I started the show off by saying this is my favorite show to do in the Fight Night Picks kind of family. And then I stopped myself and I went, I'm sorry. To John Franklin, I like early stoppage too. I actually did that. So I'll be honest here, just in case, like, your wife watches it and she sees it. But we did a Pettis Collard thing. We also did KSW, and everybody always wants the outside of the UFC stuff. Nobody watched it. And then in the comments, people are like, hey, but do ACA next. No. So If we're having a hard time with traction on this stuff, think about it from the PFL's angle. They could go one championship route and say that they get billions and billions of views as impressions, but I just don't know. Like, who's talking about the PFL right now? Not a lot of people, and they pumped a ton of money into this.
Yeah, it's tough for me because, you know, and I don't want to go too long on this, but it's I do think there's something there.
Yeah.
I will say this, not for the last time, but for this time. They should be a feeder league for the UFC. It's right there for you. Said it 1,000 times. That's 1,001. Do it.
Let's move on, John. And Joanna Champion wants next. And to me, it sounded more like she listened to the song Casper by Migos' third guy, Takeoff, on repeat since last winter. Go look that song up. You probably never heard it because the end of your hip-hop days were what? Eric B and Rakim? Is that it? Don't sweat the technique.
Don't sweat it.
She said the baddest bee on the planet is back. So, John, Joanna's 0-3 against the two ladies competing for the strawweight title this weekend. And among others, Mackenzie Dern and Yan Xiaonan are on the rise. Is it time to throw Joanna back into the title picture after this weekend?
You know, the funny thing about Joanna is she was such, you know, she was the boogie woman, right? I mean, she called herself that. So she, despite having losses, is still in all, she is a world beater. And she will forever be a world beater, and that's how we're going to look at her. And for that reason, she is she's always going to be in the title picture. Until somebody – I mean, nobody's really knocked this chick dead that I've ever can remember. So
Rose.
That, well, yeah, that's right. Rose did get her. So other than that, so yeah, I think that she's always going to be relevant. She's just one of those people that can just kind of insert themselves in the same way. You know, we've seen Connor do such great things that it's hard to not always give him the benefit of the doubt. That's what Joanna has. She has the benefit of the doubt.
To me, like, yeah, Dern's right there. She just beat Nina Nunes. But she probably needs another win. Yan Xiaonan, we haven't seen her in a little bit. She had a big winner last time out, but she probably needs another one. Joanna's been out, well, for the same amount of time that Zhang Wei Li's been out. I'd be cool with her getting next. I mean, you know, everybody else needs to kind of play a little bit of catch up. And even though Joanna's been out for a while, I'd be cool with it. I'm all right with it in that sense. Even though she's coming off a loss, even though her recent run's kind of Jose Aldo-esque. Listen, we saw Jose Aldo look great against Marlon Vera. Who's to say that Joanna doesn't come back out? And you can make the argument that she beat Zhang Weili the first time with the swollen forehead. So I'm cool with it. Surprisingly, normally I take like a hot take here and I'm not, but I'm all right with this one.
Yeah. You know, I think that it was weird the way she took apart Carla Esparza as kind of like her introduction to the UFC. Just, I think, is really sat with everybody. I mean, I don't know that it sat with me for sure. So yeah.
What's your take on like ska music?
I don't have one.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right, Craig, we move on to sparring sessions. Nolan King, friend of the show, tweeted out fight salaries for UFC 261 will not be available as public records. Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulations, Patrick Farragosin, tells me the purse for the event for that event has been deemed a trade secret by the promoter and therefore exempt from public record. I want to talk about this, and the larger question for sparring sessions is, should fighter pay be public information? But I want to color this or talk about this through the filter of this thing which happened this week, which was Ari Emanuel was interviewed by The New Yorker, and he gave a different perspective of how UFC Fight Island came together than Dana White did. His perspective was that it was pretty much entirely funded by folks in Abu Dhabi. Whereas Dana White said, this is costing us money. And so the larger question that I want to ask, and we can answer the question of should fighter pay be public information, but the larger question is this part of, you know, when you see Dana having a press conference with the governor of Florida, and do you think that the UFC is going out of their way to paint a picture that they are spending more than they actually are to keep fighter pay low?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. like the tweet that came out as we're filming right now from John Jones, I never discussed wanting $30 million with you or Hunter at Dana White. Dana White, just where you heard that number, is someone speaking with you on my behalf or ... It's weird. I can talk from personal experience that as being a New Brunswicker, and, you know, being a good guy, I vote, I pay my taxes. Do I volunteer? Well, I don't have a lot of time. But being a New Brunswicker, when the UFC came to New Brunswick and had that one card in Moncton, you were either jazzed or you weren't. And then when you found out that the city of Moncton footed a bill of $250,000 to get the UFC to come to Moncton, to come into a brand new arena that had just opened like a month, month and a half before they got there, it turned a lot of, like, it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. That was $250,000. I'm sure Abu Dhabi paid way more than $250,000. I mean, they set up a whole facility to have the fights. The fighters were at that, what was it? Was it a W hotel? Is that what it was?
It was a nice hotel.
It was a big hotel. And they pumped it all the time. There were those Abu Dhabi travel ads, whatever. But put yourself in the UFC shoes. You could go to Fredericton, New Brunswick, where I'm at. UFC would never come here. We don't have an arena for it. Or you could go to Moncton. Fredericton's going to give you no money. Moncton's going to give you $250,000. You're always going to take the $250,000. You'd be stupid not to. Ethically speaking, you know, if Abu Dhabi says, hey, we're going to throw millions of dollars at you, or you can have fights in, you know, your own facility at the Apex where you're not really going to get any tax breaks and you're just going to be kind of, you are going to be forced to foot the bill. What are you going to do? You're going to take Fight Island. So from the UFC's perspective, I can see that. The whole fighter salary thing, though, really throws a wrench into a lot of different facets. And I mean, we've seen it too with fighter pay not getting disclosed in other states. And your president having a good relationship with the governor, I'm sure that helps. So from the UFC's perspective, it helps out their business operations. But from a fighter standpoint, you know, we have a really good interview coming out this week with Brett Johns. And I'm sure you've heard of Brett Johns. You've seen him fight. He fought Pedro Munhoz. He fought Aljamain Sterling. He lost those fights. But he left the UFC on a 2-fight win streak. And Brett wanted to get paid. And I'm paraphrasing. But he kind of wanted to get paid Merab Dvalishvili money. Just what Merab was making. They were both 5-2 in the UFC. To him, it made sense. Just baseline, pay me like that for my next 4 fights. And the UFC kind of balked on it. But what if he didn't know what Merab was making? Where do you kind of base your expectations? And are they too high? Well, if they're too high, then they'll probably give you the boot. Are they too low? Well, they're going to sign right on the dotted line. And if they're right there, they might even want to negotiate. So for fighters, this is bad news.
Well, I agree. But my only pushback to that would be then what you would do if you were a fighter. You would just sign with the representation of the guys who were fighting at or near your level, and that way, I mean, the representation would always know what the guys are making. So I'm with you. I don't know where I fall on this because I'm not an anti-business. I'm a teacher, so I'm not somebody that thinks about business all that much. But I think that, you know, and I'm not somebody obviously that's concerned with money. I wouldn't be a teacher. But I think that for me, I just think that it's like the UFC is delaying the inevitable, which is at some point there has to be. What they're doing is they're building a situation where everybody looks out for themselves, which ultimately is the number one opponent of a union. You should get everybody looking out for themselves. No one wants to unionize. Like, now is the perfect time for John Jones to be thinking about a union, but he's thinking about making $30 million or 20 or whatever his number is. So he's not thinking about unionizing. But if it's like, you know, John Jones and Francis Ngannou and all these guys, you have got. I've said this before, I'll say it again. The only way to get a union to go through is to have champions sit and have champions threaten to sit out of championship fights. Not just say, I'm not going to fight until there's a collective bargaining agreement, because then they'll just strip you and somebody will happily take your belt. You need to no-show events.
Yeah, I don't think it's, and I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. But when you go to one of those concrete jungle parks, like what's the snack that you put in your cargo shorts? Is it instant ramen?
No, it's because how would you make instant ramen if you were at a concrete?
You don't. You crush it up like a savage. You put the stuff in and then just eat it.
Nature Valley. Almond butter biscuits. We'd love Nature Valley, if you're watching, we'd love to be have you be a sponsor. All right, let's move on to For the Gram. Let's talk about this $2 million bet. Snoop said it happened. Dana said it didn't. Dana did say that he would put $1 million on Ben Askren when he was talking to, I think, Mike Tyson. So let's keep it simple, Craig. Do you think this bet happened?
No. No, it's just like one of those things where they set it out in public and then. Do you really have to honor something like that?
No, Snoop said that they had a bet. And Dana denied. He said, I would never make an illegal bet.
Okay, so what if, did you watch that card?
Yeah.
What if Oscar De La Hoya went, yeah, but he bet me $5 million, baby! Like, would you believe what Oscar said?
No,
Mike Tyson, I love you!
No, I wouldn't believe what Oscar said, but I will say this. Oscar being high is more out of character.
Allegedly.
Snoop, allegedly. Is more out of character than Snoop. Like, Snoop is lives his life high. Here's where my one problem with what Snoop said. I can't imagine a scenario where Dana White would be willing to bet $2 million on Ben Askren. I don't think Dana likes Ben Askren enough to risk $2 million of his money on Ben Askren. He's probably been, since the day he met Ben Askren, has been thinking that this guy is going to disappoint me in some way. And ultimately he did. So if Dana, I'll just say this. If you thought Dana hated Ben Askren before, if he'd laid $2 million on him and lost, he hates him even more now. All right, Craig, let's move on to one Twitter hitter. Khamzat Chimaev is back. He's looking to fight in August. Said he'd fight at 205. How much does that matter to the UFC, to the 170-pound division, 85, 205? Does it matter, or is it wait and see because of the COVID complications?
Yeah, it's wait and see. Just take a fight first. Like, it's really tricky. Take a fight at 185 and then maybe move back down to 170 when you can cut the weight. Yeah, 205 is just kind of silly right now.
It is silly, but 205 is looking for a star. A friend of mine I used to do podcasts with 100 years ago, TJ Craig, texted me the Blachowicz to share a ESPN graphic, and literally underneath it put, is this where we're at with the light heavyweight division? And I'm like, this is where we're at. It's Blachowicz and Teixeira. So there you go. Posted to the book. So Connor and Nate are back at it, roasting each other. Connor saying Nate's probably on steroids. Nate saying McGregor fast sucks, and it's the reason why he got beat. Is this typical Nate Connor stuff? Is it just like, you know, they set their calendars? They set their, Outlook calendar every 3 months. I got to tweet something about Nate. Every 3 months, I got to tweet something about Connor. Is it just their way to stay relevant so that the fight may happen when they want it?
So first, like, in a rank them, DGK, DC, and Element. What's your favorite brand?
DGK. Okay, so quick rank them. DGK, Element, what was the other one?
DC.
DC, Etnies, Airwalk. So I'm going to go Airwalk. Etnies, Element, DC, DGK.
I'll just say DC and Element, but I had so many shirts from your TJ Maxx equivalent up here, Winners. I had so many Element shirts from there. And then I bought a pair of DC shoes when I was in grade 8 or 9. I remember going to get them at a skate shop thinking they were the coolest thing, went to school. And then a girl in my friend group had the exact same shoes. And then everybody said I had girl shoes. That wouldn't happen in 2021, but it happened to me in like 2009.
You know what a generational difference between you and I is? Someone your age says a girl in my friend group. Someone my age says this chick I know. That's a generational difference between the two of us.
To answer.
Well, let's get to this. Come on, Connor, Nate.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. But yeah, I mean, Connor's got a fight to worry about. So Nate Diaz is not the guy standing across from him. Keep doing stuff like this. You know, it doesn't take much of your energy. But Connor McGregor is no Steve Jobs. I can tell you that much.
Connor McGregor is no Steve Jobs. Truer words were never spoken. All right, let's get to start the conversation. Then we'll hit finish strong. So we talked about PFL earlier, and this is as much as anybody's talked about the PFL in some time, but they released today that they have all this technology. They're going to put stuff in the gloves to measure, you know, punch velocity, measure punch stats. So let's talk about stats in MMA. And maybe we'll go a little inside baseball in terms of how you or Matt do some of your research in preparation for the breakdowns. I'll keep to start the conversation with a simple question. Will MMA fans ever care about stats in the way either the PFL wants them to or in the way other sports do?
Okay, I'm going to give you two different views on this. So in hockey, if you look at their jerseys for this year, in the back right shoulder, there's a little bit of a rectangle that you can see almost on a seam where they did the same thing. They put like, you know, an accelerometer. You can tell certain metrics off of that. It's not like information that you or I can see, but the NHL can see it. They tried to put the same type of technology inside of the pucks, but then the fighters could, or the fighters, there's not really fighters in hockey anymore. The hockey players kind of figure out which puck was which, even though they're supposed to be the same weight and feel. They kind of figured it out. So they kind of put that one to the wayside. I think everybody's trying to do what baseball's doing right now. And what baseball does is launch angle and what, like OPS plus and all these numbers that you probably didn't hear about 5 years ago. Now they matter. So barreled balls and all the different things that you can find. Some of the information you're going to get from like a pitch ninja, like there's all sorts of things out there, quantitative data that you can take in baseball and relay it to, I should have this player on the mound. I should have this player in the field. I should have this player at bat. And that's how I should structure my game. If I do that, I can save runs. I can score runs. And that's what the whole game depends on. What in the good goddamn does punch speed mean to anything? I can go out there and I can hit trees as fast as I want. Does it mean anything? Does it mean I hit hard? No. Does it mean that I hit quick? Maybe, but does it really equate to a whole lot? Not necessarily. These numbers are all just for show right now, the way that they're shown. What other organization shows strike speed than the PFL? Tell me, because I haven't seen anybody. Arm strikes, leg strikes, significant strikes, total strikes. They matter, but you have to add a little bit of context to them. Because the worst thing that I see out there, there's nothing worse than this. The perfect example, Tanner Boser and Andre Arlovsky. I don't care how you scored that fight. However, if you look at the final stat line, you go, holy shit, Tanner Boser beat the tar out of Andre Arlovsky. He landed way more strikes. He landed way more significant strikes. But then if you really break it down and you watch the fight, you can tell, okay, well, Boser's first round was good. The second round, Arlovsky rallied. He probably did land the harder shots. And in the third round, it was more Arlovsky, 29-28 Arlovsky. There's fighters like this all the time that cry robbery when the stats don't equate to a win. Max Griechen when he fought Dustin Jacoby. I still thought Griechen won here recently, but Jacoby ended up getting the decision. So when you look at some of these stats, you have to take them with a grain of salt, and they have to be explained in context, because if they're not, it looks silly. Another one of the stats that the PFL shows, they kind of show like an octagon like this or a circle. And then on the outside, they show advancing stats. That's great. Or stats where somebody's on, you know, behind the two black lines, as you say with UFC. That's great. You just have to be able to explain it to a fan. Because if I throw, you know, a sabermetric book at you and you've never watched baseball in your life, or you're a very casual observer of baseball, you're going to have no idea what any of those statistics mean. The PFL has to do a better job of relaying it to the fans. And from the short bit that I watched before we came on, it was just the same old, a bunch of numbers on a page, and it wasn't really explained all that well.
Here's where it gets weird. Because in other sports, they all are under the same parameters of time. So if you're a pitcher, now pitchers pitch a certain give, like, you know, some get knocked out in the third inning, some pitch seven innings, some pitch, you know, full complete games. But you can still equate, you can compare the stats. It's hard to compare the stats in the UFC. I think stats have value at the end of a fight. But I don't know if they have value in, like, who's the league leader in takedowns. If you go in there, for example, well, just hear me out. Are you a more effective grappler? Like, who's a more effective grappler? Well, not even comparing people. We don't know how effective a grappler Khamzat Chimaev is because he goes in there and just takes guys out quick. So I think that you can't – that's where it gets weird. And that each fight, it depends on your opponent. It depends on how long the fight goes. There's just too many variables to have, like, some of these stats matter, right? Like, GSP has a lot of stats over time, but there was a portion of his career where every fight was five rounds. Same thing with BJ Penn. Go ahead.
And like for you know, to kind of break the fourth wall, to go inside of it, like people see me on these videos and I get these great big long pages of notes. I have a full page for Ariane Carnelosi and Na Leung to lead off the card tomorrow. Like, that's how much we're watching. But to get into it, like, you know, if a fighter, let's say hypothetically, Jim Miller has the most fights in UFC history. It's what, 37, I think. Do I count when Jim Miller fought Joe Lozon? No. Like, what do I look at? So normally it's the last three, and then to an extent, the last five. If it's somebody that fights, you know, every other Saturday, like Kevin Holland. All right. Well, he looked this way in some of these fights. And then his last two, he got totally out wrestled. So for his next fight, what am I going to wait more? And how am I going to gauge his performance? So it's difficult. You know, with baseball, you're right. If I'm, I don't know, Jacob DeGrom, and I'm the Mets, and I'm playing, I don't know, the Phillies. Okay, well, how do I cut it up against right-handers? How do I cut it up against left-handers? How do I fare with the rest of the league? Like, what's my spin rate like against the NL East versus the NL West? What's my velo looking like? There's so many different stats I can throw at you that quantitatively matter, but you have to put them in context. So if it's just numbers on a page and we're just going to puke these numbers up, yeah, Craig Allen might be interested in them, but I can start to poke holes in them. If I can, if some of them matter to me, but I can poke holes in them, all right, so be it. I might complain. I might applaud them in certain circumstances. But if you're the PFL and you're trying to rope in the casual fan, there's not a lot of people that watch MMA the way that I watch it, the way that you watch it. Like, again, the reason why I got into this was because I was the nerdy kid with the baseball cards memorizing David Ortiz's stats so I could go and tell my friends what his batting average was in 2007. Do you think I had a lot of friends? Maybe. Was I a lot of fun on the playground on the baseball diamond? Maybe. I'm here now, right? But for the PFL to do that, you're only going to really reel in a very small subsection of very, very hardcore fans.
I agree. All right, let's move on to finish strong. I want to start finish strong with this one in the category of could be true, could not be true. Saw it on Twitter, a little bit unsure about it. Conor McGregor bought the pub where he popped that old man. Did you see that?
I don't practice Santeria, do you?
No, I don't have a crystal ball. Okay. So do you think Conor bought the pub where he cracked that old man? And if he did, why?
I don't have a good answer. I'm too focused on the PFL stats.
It's an interesting level of pettiness if you did.
I'm on like a Jake Hager level of like, I'm rock hard with emotion over this. yeah, it is pretty petty if you're going to go and do it. Maybe it's like a local watering hole close to his house. I don't know.
I mean, obviously he was a patron if it happened. All right, let's move on. Jorge Masvidal is looking to start a bare knuckle promotion. He's the BMF champ. I mean, it seems like it kind of makes sense, right? I mean, if you're going to do this, one, do you like the idea of him doing it? And two, is there any way to avoid calling it BMFs or BMF, whatever?
Or like in Ray's head when he beat Ray, the protege? Like, listen, if this is what it takes to get rid of those Kimbo Slice ads on Fight Pass, then yeah, do it. Because who's your competition? BKB in England, Mark Godbeer's promotion, that's not BKB, Dave Feldman, and what, Valor Fights, I think, with Ken Shamrock. He's got some bare knuckle. There's your four. I think Masvidal has the best opportunity to promote it because that's kind of where he came from, the backyard fights. And I think maybe this is something that ends up on like a Fight Pass and you get the Dana White rub. Because you were, a gentleman and you took these two fights with Usman. But am I going to watch it? No.
You know, this is, to me, kind of how business is being done now. These guys are figuring out if they get – because I don't really think anybody wants to really be in the promotion business as much as they may think they do. But they're using the Dana connection. Khabib's kind of doing it. Masvidal's kind of doing it here to use him to sort of promote and use Fight Pass as a vehicle. Or a vessel, if you will, for their promotion. Lorisenko called out Daniel Cormier during the weigh-in show on his towel gate from back in the day. There's 1,000 reasons to give Lorisenko props. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm going to divert it to Daniel Cormier making fun of friend of the show, Mike Pendleton.
I was going to do the same thing.
Who took one on the chin there on social media. So props to the biggest Chicago Bears fan that's out there. But good on Laura. Good on her.
All right, there you go. There you have it. This episode of Early Stoppage is in the books. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FFP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Before I ask you to say something witty, I want to say one thing myself. You took a little shot at me earlier about Eric B and Rakim, but on a serious note, I am wearing my Digital Underground shirt today because yesterday we lost Shock G, also known as Humpty Hump. When I was a kid, I loved Digital Underground, thought they were like fun and had some good rhymes, and they were kind of like a less serious version of A Tribe Called Quest. So rest in peace, Shock G. Craig, say something witty.
Go home, dig out your Game Boy, blow out that cartridge, and play Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 for my guy, John Franklin.
Yes, sir. We'll see you next week. Peace.